Postal Center. I can tell you a little bit about the background. We get our last annual report with you when you leave. But maybe we should hear about the Tacoma Prize winners first. So who will start? I understand you have from the two last years, or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of are at different ends of the spectrum because I'm an old person. And so my name is Marilyn Kimmerling, and I was the prize winner, the Peace Prize winner for 2020 and 21.
Okay, for both, yes. Yeah.
Because, primarily because COVID had made it impossible for us to come to Norway those 2 years.
Yeah.
And I just have kind of, my whole life, worked for social justice and economic justice and equity and environmental justice in various different capacities, and that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
And I'm also currently president of a tiny little local radio station. It's called KTA for Tahoma, and that's why I'm recording. It's a hyper local station because in the United States we have large corporations that are buying up all of the access, smaller ones. When Hurricane Katrina hit, the only way that people could get local information was one tiny station. All the rest of them were all iHeartRadio with no local information for what to do in a crisis or an emergency. So when the FCC, the Federal Communications Corporation, announced that they would be releasing the last little spots on the radio dial for low-powered educational radio, a group of us got together and decided that we wanted to start a station in Tacoma.
Okay.
And so that's what I'm doing today. But
yeah.
I just do whatever I can, wherever I see a need. So working for climate coherency and indigenous rights and equity for all people.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So you are, seems that you are very active.
I do what I can.
Yeah. And you have been active for many years.
I go back a ways.
Yeah.
But I don't think I do more than anybody else that's deeply involved. I just happen to have gotten the recognition that year.
Yeah.
I would. I definitely want to take a crash course in environmental sustainability with you. Want to learn more about that.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're the 22 winner?
Correct. Yeah.
So let me hear about your engagement.
Yeah. It's a
yes?
Okay. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, first and foremost. Thanks for having us, and thanks for having me. My name's Kwabi Amwa Forson. I'm originally from Tacoma, Washington, and basically over the last few years I've been doing a lot of humanitarian work in Tacoma and in the U.S. I drive something called the Peace Bus. It's an actual vehicle. It's baby blue. It's very bright and vibrant.
Okay.
And I use it to distribute goods and services to people in need in the community. I've delivered things from socks and blankets to the homeless to books to our youth across the nation. And just recently I had a campaign called Every Kid Eats. So in Tacoma, Washington, our city, there were restaurants every single day of the week where kids could eat for free. And so we served over 1,000 kids, and I hope to double that next year with an even bigger campaign.
Really?
And I'm a pilot, actually.
Okay.
And I have the Peace Bus, right? So my hope is by 2025 to have the peace plane and to fly for peace, raising awareness of.
But are you working as a pilot for the time being?
No, I'm in flight school.
Okay.
I gotta finish that first.
I see.
And just my biggest thing is two things. So putting peace into action, we talk about it a lot, right? But yeah. I'm curious, and I'm a real big proponent of putting those ideas into action. And for each individual, whatever skill that they have, to utilize that for peace. Yeah.
Yeah. Good to hear. And the three of you others, you are joining them for this visit, of course. But
yes, I'm on the committee
Tacoma Peace Prize Committee.
Tacoma Peace Prize Committee. And Janet Root.
Oh, she wants to say hello.
Sends her greetings to you. You have met her before.
We met her before. That's right.
And so it's my pleasure and honor each year to review the names and stories of people like these guys and make the hard decision as to which one is number one. And,
I see.
That year. But,
and the two others, you are joining them for this trip? Yes?
Less so. I live in a different city than my sister, so...
Okay, you're a brother and sister, huh?
Yeah,
my brother.
And so I support my sister, but it's mostly from afar. I live in Portland, which is not far from where she is, but it's far enough away that...
Larry is one of the finest human beings I know, and it was my honor to invite him.
I don't know about that.
And for you?
Yes, me and Quabana have gone back
quite
some years. Yeah, we grew up in church, and I'm a musician, so I got to first help him with his show by playing drums on his soundtrack, and then just trying to support him throughout his journey.
Last year when we took our trip from Washington State to Washington, D.C., giving out books, Isaiah came along with me, so he was a big help on that.
Okay. Well, I think the coffee is ready, so I can take it here for us.
So you will attend the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony, I understand, on Saturday?
Yes, we will.
Yeah, that's always a great event. And you are also visiting other Norwegian institutions, I assume, yes?
Yeah.
So who would like to have a cup of coffee?
I would.
You will, yes. So it's a good starter in the morning.
Yeah, of course. I would love to hear more about...
Yes, I can tell.
Because I already started earlier today.
Half a cup. Okay, there are other beginner's cups as well. And for you?
Please.
Yes.
Thank you.
And for you?
I'm fine.
You are fine.
Mm-hmm. I'll take just a little bit. Save some for yourself.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's fine.
We have water also, if you want.
Oh, yeah, water. Ooh, yeah.
You would like to have water?
That would be phenomenal.
Yes. Yes? Okay, fine.
My stupid phone won't stop doing that.
Uh-oh. Keeps on hooting.
Can you take the water in the cup?
That would be great.
It was not the glass here for the time.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, now I can tell you more about the center. We, as you probably know, I was a politician for many, many years, and being elected to the parliament for 32 years, and I was Minister of Church and Education Affairs for some years, and for Foreign Affairs some years, and I ended up as Prime Minister in two terms for 1997 to 2000 and 2001 to 2005. And then I stepped down and left Parliament. And then I founded this Oslo Center together with a colleague of mine from politics. And in the beginning Well, I decided to stay in Norway. That was a personal decision together with my wife, and therefore I wanted to do something from here, but in international politics, and I wanted to see if we could contribute to help people in need in one or another way. So but we didn't have a very clear picture in the beginning of what areas we should prioritize, so we started with some interreligious dialogue projects. I'm a theologian as a background, and especially one project with the former president Mohammad Khatami of Iran, was very interesting. He's a dialogue-oriented man, a reformist. He tried to reform Iran, but he was very often stopped by the so-called Council of Guardians. They have a crazy political system where these clergymen, Muslims, they have the Council of Guardians, and every main decision of the parliament has to be approved by these Council of Guardians. And they stopped most of them, all his reforms. So, but when he stepped down, as I met him when I was prime minister, he was president. So we stepped down at about the same time, and we he knew that I founded this Oslo Center, and he contacted me, and he made his own foundation in Tehran.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we had a very interesting project over 2.5 years with 5 different events, one every half year, and 2 of them were in Oslo, 2 in Tehran, and 1 in Geneva. About different topics of common interest, about religion and politics, about gender and equality. That was very sensitive, of course, for Iranians. But we made it, came out with a common statement. We had one about human rights. So that was very interesting. But so after his time, now they have, it's more and more restrictive in Iran, as you know, and the current regime has closed his foundation. He's in praxis in house arrest. Mm. So now it's impossible to have contact with him, unfortunately. Mm. And we had some other interreligious projects as well. And so we had some human rights project. We made our own report on the situation in Eritrea by help of a professor here in Oslo. Eritrea is one of the worst countries in the world with regard to respect for human rights. So, but it's not that much focus on it because it's not so big country at the Horn of Africa.
Right.
But the president is in fact a dictator and has no elections and no press freedom. It's terrible. I have been there 3 times because I was appointed by Secretary General of the UN Kofi Annan to be his special envoy to Horn of Africa for 2 years, I think it was, and then I visited the president in Eritrea also. But it was impossible to have a fruitful dialogue with him about human rights. That was impossible.
Mm. Was there any area where you could reach agreement
with
the president of Eritrea? Was there any commonality where you could reach agreement?
Almost not. Of course, it was the humanitarian crisis at the Horn of Africa in these years. This was in 2006 and 2007 that I should focus on. And of course, we had the common interest of trying to help people in need in that humanitarian crisis after several years of droughts at the Horn of Africa and several East African countries. But with regard to human rights, it was impossible. We contributed to a report about the human rights situation in North Korea, which is, I will say, the worst case in the world with regard to respect for human rights.
Right.
And I've been to North Korea myself once. That was when I was a parliamentarian, in a parliamentarian delegation. We were both in North and South. That was a very special trip, I remember. Much to say about that and this closed country. And, of course, they showed us only the surface. But we acknowledged that it was very difficult for people there. But I have been interested in the Korean Peninsula in general, and I got a good friend who was president in South Korea, Kim Dae-jung. He was also a Nobel laureate. Unfortunately, he passed away some years ago now, but we became close friends, and I was interested in the situation in the North as well. So we contributed to a human rights report that was primarily done by the U.S. law firm DLA Piper, if you have heard about them, with George Mitchell as he was the chair of DLA Piper.
I had a question in regards to North Korea. In your opinion, what are the, what would you say are the next viable steps towards liberating a country like that?
Well, we recommended in our report sanctions on the regime. Mm-hmm. And to some extent they have been implemented, as we know, but we also recommended 5 parties talks about, especially about the nuclear issue, but that could also be used as an entrance to discuss other things, and hopefully the North Koreans could open up to the international world. And we know there were taken some steps. Hillary Clinton was, as far as I remember, as a Secretary of State visiting North Korea in her term. I hope that that could be a start of a more open process. We have some small Christmas cakes in that box. You can just send it around if you want. But it's very difficult. I think sooner or later that regime will collapse.
Okay.
I'm rather convinced.
It's interesting you're mentioning.
Do you want a piece of cake?
No, thank you. It's interesting your mention of sanctions, because it looks like historically sanctions against a country have not worked to weaken their anti-human rights stance. All it seems to do is penalize the people that live in that country.
Primarily, it must be people inside to make a revolt. Mm-hmm. I do agree. But we have one interesting exception, and that is South Africa. Mm-hmm. Because South Africa was the combination of sanctions from the international community.
They cared about their PR.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
But it was sanctions, and on the other hand, it was, of course, an uprising from inside, primarily by ANC, but also the churches and the labor unions. And I also knew President Nelson Mandela and his successor, Thabo Mbeki, and even Frederick de Klerk, who was vice president under Mandela, but he was president as the last apartheid president. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting that Mandela wanted him to be a part of his leadership.
Right.
So I had Thabo Mbeki and Frederick de Klerk here in Oslo, it's about 10 years ago, to speak at our annual seminar, both of them. And they did. Mm-hmm. And stood on the same podium and talked about their experience of the transition from apartheid to democracy in South Africa, from these two different angles. So that was very interesting. But back to the Oslo Center, we worked on that human rights report. So, in the beginning, interreligious dialogue and some human rights projects, but more and more we were involved in what we now call democracy assistance projects.
Tell me.
Yeah, and that is now our main program field. Not so much interreligious activities any longer, because so many others are doing that also in Norway. Not so much specific human rights, of course it's included in democracy, because so many other Norwegian organizations are working on human rights. But democracy assistance, we are the only in Norway having that as a main program. And that means that on invitation from the authorities in countries where democracy is developing in the beginning in a way, but very vulnerable, they invite us to come and share our experience on how to run a democratic system.
And what countries have asked you to do that?
Yeah. First of all, Kenya in Eastern Africa. We have been in Kenya almost since our beginning. We were founded, as I said, in 2005. So it's now 17 years ago, and we have been in Kenya most of these years. And they are very important in the Eastern Africa, and consequently in the whole of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So if they succeed to develop and stabilize their democracy, that is so important, not only for the Kenyans, but for countries around, because they will look at Kenya as a good example. And they are, to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can say that we have really helped them. We have worked with the political parties, how they can cooperate, because they're not so used to cooperate. They only fight it against each other. And we said that, of course, you have a competition, but on the other hand, you must also cooperate in parliament to get majority behind decisions. And we have talked with them about how to run a coalition government, because Kenyans are used to have coalition governments now, but very fragile. We have had special project to empower women to take part in political life.
Mm-hmm.
and young people, and youth. So we have specific projects for women and for youth and for political parties. These are the three main areas now. We are now also have also now started in Tanzania with similar projects. And in Somalia. Somalia is, of course, a very difficult country. You have rather many Somalians in the diaspora in the U.S. I met some of them in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And many think that Somalia is a failed state. Yes, to some extent they are. But we must remember the background. They had civil wars for many years, and military leaders who ruled the country, different parts of the country, they didn't have a parliament, didn't have a government, they didn't have a state budget, no political institutions. It was ruled by these military groups.
Right.
But back in 2005, I think it was, they managed to establish a parliament, but not based on political parties, but based on ethnic groups. And the elders, leaders of the ethnic groups. And we have worked with them, with their parliament especially, over
There's
some years.
So much economic desperation in
that
country.
Yeah, it is desperation. But they now need to get their political institutions to function. And we have tried to help them, especially in the parliament, all standing committees, how to work in the parliament. They have no experience because they were run by warlords. And the speaker of the parliament, who lived in Norway 18 years as a refugee, he returned and became elected speaker of the parliament.
Wow.
So we worked with him. So now we have moved over to Puntland, which is part of Somalia. You know, in Somalia you have the southern Somalia, where you have the capital, Mogadishu, and so, but you also have two regions who are rather independent, and that is Puntland and Somaliland, and they are functioning much better. They have the parliament, had for many years, and governments, and in fact they are more or less independent, but they are a part of the federal Somalia state. So we are now, we have a started project in Puntland.
And where?
In Puntland, that region, that state of Somalia.
Right.
Working in the same way with parties, with young people, with women. So these are the three countries for the time being. But we have been been working in Myanmar. You see up there, you have a bust of Aung San Suu Kyi. She's a close friend of mine. A Nobel laureate. Unfortunately, now she is
back
not
under arrest.
Yeah, she's not only in house arrest, but she's in prison. Yeah. In fact, but you know, they were on the right way. They had elections. She was elected. Her party had the majority of parliament. She was elected as what they call state councillor, which in fact is prime minister. I visited her also when she was in that position.
But the military just is not allowing that.
No, and so the military made a new coup. Now, unfortunately, so now she's back in prison, so it's tragic. Mm-hmm. Because they were on the right track. But the military stopped this development.
My youngest son travels a lot teaching, and he was in Myanmar when this last uprising happened and Aung San Suu Kyi was put in prison. And he basically had to leave Myanmar because the situation was so tense.
I know, it's very difficult. I've been to the country many, many times.
People are, oh my God, the friends they had, their families were so poor. And trying to get medical care for their parents on the salaries they made was just impossible.
That's right. And they have been living under military regimes over many years, since 1962. Up to the change in 2012, it became a change, and she became state councillor a couple of years later. They had a civil government. Things were moving in the right direction, but the military still had much power because they had a blocking minority in the parliament and the same in the government. But nevertheless, to some extent, a democratic system. And so everything...
They knew that they weren't allowed to be politically active while they were in the country, but they could not resist going up in the mountains and doing some... trying to teach at night to some of the tribal members up there that had no access to education. And they finally had to leave the country. It was just too intense. You mentioned sanctions, and I've been thinking a lot about that, because in the U.S., we're getting a lot of blowback. I'm a member of Jewish Voice for Peace.
I see.
And we are trying to speak up so that our elected officials know that not all Jewish people support the state of Israel's behavior, no matter what. And one of the ways we're showing that is by boycotting products that are made by Israel in the West Bank. And of course, when Trump was president, and still to some extent now, we were getting pushed. They were trying to make it illegal for people to do an economic boycott. And here it was effective with South Africa, because South Africa needed the goodwill of the rest of the world in order to continue to function. Well, we believe that Israel does too. And probably we wouldn't have that kind of pushback response if it weren't effective.
Yeah.
And yet, we do. What do you think about that, the U.S.'s stance on that?
Do you think of Israel, especially, or?
Pardon?
Do you think about Israel?
I'm thinking about two things.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about our government's stance on economic boycotts of Israeli products made in the West Bank, and also Jewish Voice for Peace's stance that our U.S. tax dollars should not be going to equip the Israeli government with military equipment to use against the West Bank Palestinians.
Yeah, no, it's very complex. I've been engaged in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict for many years, and you know they had the negotiations here leading up to the Oslo Accords many years ago. I was Minister of Foreign Affairs when this process started, but I had stepped down before it was concluded. I still believe in a two-state solution, despite it becomes more and more difficult, because when Israel has occupied so many big territories of the West Bank, it's very. But I don't see any one-state solution, because that will in fact be an apartheid state. And some mean that it is already an apartheid state, as Jimmy Carter has stated, for instance. He's also a friend of mine. And but I still believe that they should. But it's very bad conditions for the time being. Netanyahu coming back as prime minister in Israel, that's not promising. He was a colleague of mine when I was prime minister. So I know him very well. All his sides, I can say. Yeah. It's much to say about that, but I should not do it. On the Palestinian side, it's also a difficult situation, because President Abbas has not real support. He's too old and been sitting too long, as Yasser Arafat also did. Arafat was a friend of mine. So, for the time being, it's black. Really black. But I hope one day things can change. I don't personally believe in a boycott of goods produced at the West Bank, because I don't think that will work at all. It can have the opposite effect, I'm afraid. The Israelis become more and more extreme. So I still believe in a dialogue. It started as a back channel in Norway that time, more than 30 years ago. I think maybe it could be established a new back channel in one or another way, where people not at the highest level in the beginning, but lower level, could start and talk together. There are many initiatives of people-to-people projects in the Holy Land between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Many are friends. No doubt, they are friends.
Right.
But it's important. It seems to be impossible to get a political solution. But it's obvious what the political solution must be, in my view. It must be two states. The borders must be with some adjustments, as before 1967.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, but it must be, and Jerusalem must be capital for both. You must find one or another solution. Either they share it or they divide it. Refugees should, in principle, have the right to return, but we know that not so many of them will. So it's not that big problem that Israel is trying to make it. I discussed this with Bill Clinton because we were colleagues. He was president when I was prime minister, and he came after he stepped down to Oslo. And then we had a very good personal meeting, only the two of us. He told me about his last efforts at Camp David when he tried to make a peace agreement between Ehud Barak, who was a prime minister, and Yasser Arafat. They were so close. They were so close. And there are many explanations why it failed. He blamed very much Yasser Arafat. But Arafat was afraid that he didn't have the necessary support among the Arab countries. So that was his problem. But nevertheless, it failed, unfortunately. They have never been that close as they were in 1999. So it was tragic that it failed. So, but the Oslo Center as such has not been engaged in this conflict. But I mentioned we have been to Myanmar, Burma, and we have been to in Central Asia, in Kazakhstan, and in the Kyrgyz Republic, Kyrgyzstan. But now we are concentrating on the Eastern Africa, the Horn of Africa. We have come to the conclusion that we will have most effect if we try to prioritize one region where we have good knowledge about this region. So we have an office in Nairobi with 9 staff members, Kenyans, local Kenyans, and they are now covering Kenya, Somalia, and Tanzania for us. So we are building down the office here in Oslo. We are coming. I am an old man now. I want to retire, not only formally, but in praxis. And we are building down the office in Oslo, and we are building up the office in Nairobi. So we are funded by some Scandinavian ministries of foreign affairs for the projects. So we have project funding, but we also need some core funding. That is always a challenge, to get necessary money for the core funding, for the administration, for renting offices and logistics and so on. So that has been a challenge for several years, but when we close down here, it will be cheaper as well. So that is... And here I have... this is the last printed report from 2021, and of course we start now working on 22 report, so you can take with you and get some impressions on our work. I have very briefly now tried to explain to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Based off your work in Africa, you explain this theme of democracy, establishing democracy. What would you say are some more themes that will have to take place within Africa in order to get to diminish more of the destitution that is rampant in many countries in Africa?
Yeah. What did you mean with the last thing?
Destitution. The poverty that's in
poverty.
Africa. Yes.
Yeah. I think. It's a great challenge. And of course, sometimes there are natural catastrophes with floods, with...
climate change, too.
Climate change, of course, and it's affecting the Horn of Africa, especially. The Horn of Africa is the most poor part of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But also in southern and western regions, it's much poverty. I think it must be a combination of humanitarian aid assistance from the rich world and building up gradually functioning political institutions in the countries.
Gotcha.
Because if you don't have functioning political institutions, and that is what we are working on, then you will have many mistakes and failures, and you will get violent fighting, and of course that will be a setback also for fighting poverty.
And it seems like without a functioning government, you won't have the checks and balances on extractive corporations coming into those countries.
Right, that's big.
Yeah,
that's big.
That's so that has to be a governmental thing.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
So one question I had was just for the center. You talk about building up political institutions, but they're all to make those really functional. You also need sort of the government administrative institutions as well.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering what you guys if that's part of your mission.
No, actually not. To some extent, in Kenya, we have worked, for instance, with two administrative institutions. That is an election commission that is preparing for all the election, that they will be free and fair. And in Kenya, we can say now it's more or less free and fair. And the other is what is called the Office of the Registrar. The Registrar is an office for registration of political parties. That they are democratically based and that they are real political parties, not only a one-person game. So, so with these two, but that is primarily in Kenya. In the other countries I mentioned, we have worked primarily with the political institutions.
Okay. Yeah. It just seems to me that to maintain democracies, you need to have the democracies functioning in terms of delivering an improved standard of living for its people.
Right. Absolutely.
So it's important that you have those administrative functions, you know, whether it's just basic things like roads, healthcare, whatever.
Yeah, you are right. Yeah. First of all, of course, they have to prepare for the political decisions.
Sure,
but on the other hand, they are also, in a way, the executive that have to deliver and deliver results.
Right.
And, of course, especially on the humanitarian situation against fighting against poverty, economic welfare. So these are interlinked very closely.
Right.
So that's a challenge that
a lot of countries, there's always the argument that the government is favoring one group over another in the way that they administer the government.
Yeah, so that's right.
Having developing those institutions, it seems to me really a cornerstone, not the cornerstone, but a cornerstone of successful democracy.
Yeah. No, it's very inspiring to have been worked with this. Now I have been engaged as president of this center now for the time being on the executive chair, but I hope during next year to step down to leave it more over to the African office. But it has been very inspiring to work on these matters and especially on democracy assistance now since I stepped down as prime minister. So it's 17 years now. So that has and I have good contacts in the U.S. I mentioned that I worked with President Clinton. I worked with President George W. Bush as well, because they changed in the middle of my term. Hillary Clinton is coming here now, because on Sunday there will be what they call the Nobel Peace Prize Forum.
Right.
Maybe you are going there as well at the university.
We just learned about that.
Okay.
I haven't figured out how to get tickets.
Yeah. I think you can contact the Nobel Institute.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So maybe you can get tickets to come there. And Hillary Clinton will be one of the speakers. So I know her, of course, because of my cooperation with her husband. Mm-hmm. So, and I have other contacts in the U.S. and especially up in the Northwest, where we have so many Norwegians.
Yes.
In Minnesota, in Minneapolis, and St. Paul, and so I've been over there many times. Yeah. So that's, and I hope that you will have a joyful stay here.
Thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you for saying that, and thank you for the work you are doing.
And I wanted to give you just a few little things
thank you.
Here.
Thank you
this
so much.
This is from the Pacific Northwest, and this is more from the Pacific Southwest, the Zuni area.
Oh, thank you.
It's a little fetish. And
thank you so much.
And this, in both cases, the bear stands for steadfastness, strength, and introspection.
Okay.
So.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to bring a little treat from Tacoma.
Thank you.
Almond
I love this chocolate.
Yeah.
Macadamia roca. Thank you so much, and thank you for coming.
Yes.
Yeah. Can we get some pictures?
Of course we can.
Yeah,
we can.
For sure.
No problem. Well, how should we do it in front of this logo?
Perfect.
Yeah.
We can.